CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Absolutely jam-packed show for us here today. And we got some guests, some new guests, some old faces. And
why do you look at me when you say that?
Just because I did. I don't know why. Anyway, so that was the voice of Harry Fisher from The Bike Show. Hi, Harry. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here again.
Good. Nice to have you. And we have Andrew Leopold from the South Africa. You're on the Guild of the Motoring Journalists. And
yeah, I believe that's why I'm here.
That's so it. Exactly.
Well, you believe.
You believe. Well, thanks for joining us. And then obviously George in studio. Hi,
how's
George.
How's it finding you?
Yeah, lucky, man. Did you have a good weekend?
Well, not yesterday.
Okay, well, we'll get onto that just now. Let's not jump the gun, yeah? And Fazana, as usual. Hi, Fazana.
I'm good, thanks, and you?
Yep, very good, thank you.
Right. You going to talk today, Fazana?
Probably not, no, actually.
No, probably not. Listen, we've got quite a bit to get through, and obviously having guests in studio makes it more exciting, but and just obviously more opinions. But I think we'll kick off with the news. I don't know if you know, but the format of the show has changed somewhat, and we're just going to go from the top. So what we're going to do is unpack some news, and I don't know if you guys know, but 2 weeks ago, Thursday, Uber driver sitting outside Gautrain train station, man walks up to him, throws petrol into the car, sets it on fire, and once again, Uber and the meter taxis are obviously, you know, at each other's throats, and it's becoming a serious problem.
But do you understand the underlying reasons?
Well, I think the underlying reason is that what the meter taxi drivers are saying is that the Uber drivers are on their same routes, and they kind of think that they own the routes.
Well,
or they have, you know, first right of refusal on the routes.
It's I suppose it's less about routes and it's more about territory, because the meter taxis with the taxi associations that they belong to can operate in a particular area. So they've got a jurisdiction that they operate under. And this jurisdiction, they can't go over. So, for instance, if you have something on at Ellis Park,
yes,
the guys from Randburg Meter Taxi Association can't go to Ellis Park.
Yeah.
But all the Ubers can descend on Ellis Park. And their argument is that why the Uber driver should be regulated in a similar way
fashion.
That they've got jurisdictions. I think it's the opposite freaking way around. I think the legislation or the rules around restricting the taxi drivers to their particular areas should be relooked, rather than restricting the Uber drivers.
So you're saying that a meter taxi driver should be able to go wherever he seems
just
fit?
Open up the floodgates for them. Let them operate.
Well, let them compete on a level playing
exactly.
field.
Exactly. Because right now, based on that argument, it's not a level playing field. And I understand that. It doesn't give them the frickin' right to burn cars and shit, but
I couldn't agree more, George. And I don't know why we always turn to violence in this country. It's almost just like it's the first point of contact. You know, it's the first thing that they go to. I don't know if you know, but in the Western Cape now, taxi associations are striking. They haven't gone to work today, which puts commuters out again. And the reason for this is they're not happy with the way their organizations are being run. And now they're asking the local government to get involved to try and help them run their businesses properly.
And I think if you open it up, it'll actually just regulate itself in terms of drivers not, or meter taxis not wanting to go those sort of business because it's not profitable. So
exactly.
they'll sort of regulate themselves.
Exactly, because then they can't go and use that argument, because then it's a case of, well, why weren't you at Ellis Park, China?
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, you work where you need to work. But I see that this is obviously there's a special task force that has now been set up and it's been established to obviously tackle the violence between the meter taxis and the tech companies like Uber and Taxify.
Ah, this is the wrong objective.
And, you know, they obviously the violence is becoming an issue. I mean, I couldn't think of anything worse. Imagine sitting in your car and someone just throws petrol at you in a match.
It's ridiculous.
So that's really, really not lekker. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. But they need to do something about it. Somebody needs to make a decision. Somebody needs to say, right, these are the rules. Everybody plays by the same rules, and away we go. And I still think Uber will come out tops at the end of the day because it's consumer-driven.
And the thing is, I mean, it might be a contentious statement, but meter taxis, they're not the best experience. Uber cars are clean, the drivers are friendly, they're bang on time, they come quickly. Meter taxis, they've got to up their game.
They have to up their game.
A competition has come on board, and they're just going, oh, well, this shouldn't be allowed. No, up your game, improve your product and your delivery, then people might start using you.
But that's exactly the thing. When I get into an Uber, I know who the driver is. I've seen people comment on him. I know it's safe. With meter taxi, I can't do that.
Exactly.
I really, really can't. So, quite a bit of... you know, shenanigans still going down between the meter taxis and Ubers. I don't know if you guys know, but obviously there was the Frankfurt Motor Show last week, which was, you know, obviously at the premier
huge,
motor show,
yeah.
Absolutely massive. But I see that Greenpeace had their 10 little people outside screaming and shouting, and they really want, you know, the motor industry to make smaller cars, electric cars, and cars that are used for
but
sharing rides.
But they are.
But that's yeah. exactly the thing, because the Frankfurt, yeah. the overarching theme from the Frankfurt Motor Show was electrification.
Exactly.
So Greenpeace were there.
You're protesting about something that's actually happening.
Yeah, but they have to protest. You're doing it now, so I'm going to protest at the fact you're doing it now. It's like
yeah, you're not doing it fast enough.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So so they were outside there with their boards. The oil age is ending. Rah, rah, rah. We know that. I think we all know that this is where the world's going. So, I don't know how successful their protest would have been, but it's kind of like, you know, they were shouting at something that was already happening. So I don't know about that. Not,
I mean, if anything, from a regulation point of view, the rest of the world needs to get their government organizations to give bigger incentives
yes.
for electrification, because then it'll speed up the process.
100%, exactly.
I mean, I think the businesses are doing it out of a sense for the right thing to do, like Tesla, but what can speed up the process is government institutions is getting on board and funding the thing to a certain degree by giving tax incentives.
I think, I mean, it makes sense whether we'll see that happen, you know, how soon we'll see that happen. We know it's happening overseas.
Well, it's happening in America.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
you know, it's not happening in other countries.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys know, but it looks like petrol price is going to go up again at the end of the month.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, we were talking about EV, so that seems like a perfect fit. Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's the, you know, the oil price and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, looks like it's going to go up another 35 cents a litre. More coming out of the news. I don't know if you know that the Bugatti Chiron. 0 to 400.
And 400 to naught.
Yeah.
In 42 seconds.
And I bet there's a little bit left in that as well. I think the 400's fairly conservative for that car. So
probably.
Is it? Have you? I mean,
it'll probably run out of fuel before it gets to 400.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think there was a were they trying to break a world record? Does anyone know anything?
There is a long-standing record. I can't remember what it was done by, but
yeah. Anyway, these new EV supercars are going to blow that thing out of the water pretty soon.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. I mean, I posted something on Facebook the other day. There's a Tesla Model S, P100D, which is the four-wheel drive option. So it's motors, front and back wheels. 0 to 100 in 2.6 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, that Chiron's amazing, but it's heavy.
Yeah.
It's doesn't have the EV sort of power that is, any EV power. So, 0 to 400 back to zero, amazing attempt, but we're on a new chapter already,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, somebody asked me the other day, well, when a V8 or a V10 changes gears and they start getting their revs up, then the EVs are going to see their Ollie. I said, no.
Well, you still got to catch the EV.
You don't understand the torque curve of an electric vehicle. Yeah. It's constant.
But then a Bugatti Veyron or Chiron takes 5 minutes to fill up with petrol, whereas an electric vehicle takes 7 hours to charge, even if it's an hour to charge.
Well, it's when you go to sleep, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's such a boring drive. You want to sleep. Yes. Bring back petrol.
Do you think so?
Yeah. Let's use it all up properly. Then when it's all gone, then we can panic and all these solutions will come out. Until then, let's just use it.
So finish the oil.
Exactly.
All the fossil fuels.
Exactly.
Just get rid of them and then no one will be able to use
Harry's exactly. a Mars proponent.
Harry just wants everybody to jump on bikes because then you kind of get petrol.
No, I think Harry's worried because the electric vehicles are going to give the bikes a go 0 to 100.
Not a chance.
Are there any electric bikes?
There's a Zero.
Yeah.
Which is again, it has fantastic torque, literally from absolute zero revs.
Mm.
But then it runs out of battery in about an hour.
And it doesn't make a noise.
No, that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's just whispering death, because you can't hear it anyway. And I think that's more dangerous than having a really loud exhaust pipe.
Well, as human beings, we've become conditioned to, when you get to a road, you use your eyes and your ears.
Mm. The next thing you're going to have is like huge sound systems on electric bikes to make the noise of the bike actually riding.
They'll redo them in cars.
Are they?
Yeah.
They do. They beep when they get to intersections so that people can hear them. Because otherwise...
Yeah. Beep, you say?
make some sort of noise. Just like a... Yeah.
Carl and Devin are going to be going crazy with this. Absolutely crazy. Beep. There's an electric car. Okay, cool. Lovely. And then, yeah, I don't know if you know, but the administrative adjudication of road traffic offences, so ARTO, the bill moves a step closer to implementation. And basically, the guys have said they've made amendments to the bill, and this was done by an ARTO task team, and they believe that the system will remove habitual traffic offenders from the roads. And the changes include the rehabilitation of repeat offenders and alterations to how warrants are obviously going to be issued. But basically, long story short, is every single person is going to be given a scoring system. You will start off with a zero, and if you acquire 12 points through a demerit, well, 12 demerits, you will then have your license suspended for 3 months.
It's the same system they've had in the UK for decades.
What is the implementation date?
They're saying by the end of the 2017-2018 financial year. So it could be as early as...
Sebastian Vettel would have used all those up, I think, by now.
Well, he used all of those in one race.
He's already got 8 points against his name.
Boom, boom.
But they've been speaking about this for years.
They have been speaking about it for a while, but I think they've made changes to the proposed amendments or whatever it is. And my thing is, it doesn't matter what system we have in place in this country. If it is not regulated, if it is not implemented, and if it's not managed properly, it's never going to work.
Well, there is another problem as well, is that to get points, as they call it, on your license, you have to have a license in the first place.
Yes.
And I think that we know there are quite a few drivers on our roads that don't have any kind of a license.
So driving without a license will give you a fine of, you'll get a fine of $1,250 and 4 demerits.
On a license which you don't have.
What's nice to know that you know,
they can do that,
that
three times
have.
And then they take away the license
that you don't have. Yeah, but what they're saying as well is that each offence will be, so if you're driving an unlicensed car and you don't have a license, they won't just choose one or the other. You'll get fined for both infringements. So every single infringement.
To be entirely honest with you, if I climb in my aeroplane and. Okay, so let me put it to you this way. This is how serious I think it should be. If I climb in my aeroplane and my license has expired, so I have to get a license every 2 years in the one aeroplane and every 3 years in the other. If I have 1 hour's flight time without that license, yes, it's a 10,000 rand fine. They don't stuff around.
Yes.
It's a 10,000 rand fine plus a suspension if you offend multiple times. I think not driving with a license needs to be heavier.
I agree.
Well, you know, if you have a look at the let me just find the, there we go, here. I mean, where the driver demerit system. Yeah, so driving an unregistered vehicle 1 point, driving an unlicensed vehicle 1 point. Where are the heavy ones here? 6 points for driving under the influence of intoxicating substances. 5 for overloading, 6 for, and then obviously speeding. Speeding is where you get the kind of your heavy fines. But, you know, again, I think it's, it's obviously it works in the UK. So I don't see why it wouldn't work here, but in the
They've
UK.
They've got licenses.
Yes, but it's also regulated, though.
Yes.
It's regulated. The only reason the guy's driving without a license is because he's actually allowed to do that in this country, because he's not worried
about... But that's why I say there's no consequence.
But that's the thing, exactly. Not being pulled over. He knows that he's going to get to a roadblock if he does, and there's a chance that he could, you know, talk his way out of it, which sometimes is a good thing, but
I think it just opens up more opportunity for bribery to the police officers.
Well, some people are saying that this is just another money-making kind of
scheme. But we spoke 2 weeks, 4 weeks ago. I can't remember the exact a show, but we spoke about these new chest cams.
Yes.
You know, that should be standard on police officers.
Yeah. So in Cape Town, what they've done is got these kind of bobbies on the beat and they've put cameras all over them. So the guys are actually recording the infringements, and they're saying that the infringements for parking and, you know, minor stuff has you know, reduced quite drastically.
I think we need about 12 demerit points for violence against Uber drivers.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. It's actually crazy out there that it's not regulated. But so that's pretty much what came out of the news over the last 2 weeks. We'll just see what happens. So if this does get implemented, fantastic. We'll see how well it's monitored and how not. And George, now we'll chat a bit of F1. And all I can say is, if anybody was handed a race this weekend, it was Hamilton.
Seriously. I mean, really? I mean,
as much as I don't, I'm not a fan of the spoiled brat. I really am not.
Hey, that was a masterclass in the rain. He was faster than Ricardo in the Red Bull, which all weekend we had seen really worked around that track. And I think he was pulling out about half a second a lap in the wet in a car that doesn't suit that track. I thought it was very...
I mean, let's give it to Hamilton.
Yeah, look, he drove to finish.
He drove and he drove to finish and he did a really good job. But we got to be honest. The Mercedes Benz is not good around corners. It's good in a straight
line. High downforce, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not good around corners. The Ferrari is, the Red Bull is. That track was suited to Ferrari yesterday, and I think it was. Like burning an Uber car, that freaking Vettel went out. Yeah.
It was a pathetic show of teamwork, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Do you watch F1?
Yes.
Okay.
If anything, they should have known that Vettel is the wild card inside that front row of that grid. Be careful of him, stay out of his way, even if you have to give up a position for it.
You do Surely. Have Verstappen next to him, who's also notorious for bumping people or for getting in.
I meant Verstappen.
Yeah, Verstappen.
I mean, so, Verstappen's the wild card there. He's the one that's going to cause an accident if anybody.
Yeah, but I think this was Raikkonen's fault. Well, it was Raikkonen or Vettel. Raikkonen came up the inside. He saw a gap. Vettel squeezed over on Verstappen. Neither of them had anywhere to go.
It was Vettel's mistake 100%.
Yeah.
No Is that way. Because he came right across?
Yes. Yeah.
He was trying to defend.
He was trying to defend the racing line. I mean,
and I don't think he realised that Raikkonen made such a good start.
Nobody did.
I say he was watching. He was watching Verstappen, but he didn't really know that Raikkonen was squeezing Verstappen as well. Yeah. So.
No, it was disaster. When that happened, I got up and went to the kitchen, made myself some.
And what was even worse. I mean, let the Ferraris take each other out, and Verstappen, he can get lost as well. But Alonso was right up there, and he gets taken out as well.
Seriously,
the one race where he's at the front. Oh, no, you're not, son. Off you go. I mean, how gutting was that for him?
If there's an issue, he's going to be in it.
He said guaranteed. He missed out on a guaranteed podium.
Absolutely.
It was a terrible race.
Are there any fines? Has anything?
No, they've ruled racing incident. Nobody's at fault, which I think is more than likely the right thing to do. I mean, you know, bless the English, but they blame Vettel, obviously. But later on, the steward said
it was punishment enough. Losing 25 points on a track where they should have easily won, I think, was punishment enough. So.
Yeah,
because salt in the wounds, or
and it was a racing incident. It wasn't a cynical. He was moving over to defend his line, and he just didn't know that Raikkonen was on the along the other side. Yeah. So
check your blind spots. What's wrong with
the whole thing's a blind spot, isn't it? They can only see forward.
Yeah,
so I mean, even Verstappen said, "Oh well, he should have known that Raikkonen was on the other side." How on earth is Vettel going to know that Raikkonen's over there? No, it's not like he's sitting up. Oh, there you are. Sorry, I'll see you, lad. Okay.
No.
I mean, really?
Yeah, no, you're right.
No, the guys are racing. I mean, it's flat out and, yeah. I mean, okay. So.
Let's face it. It happened, what was it, a couple of years ago when Hamilton took out Rosberg? Was it in Austria or Germany or somewhere?
They keep replaying that incident.
It's going to run and run, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I see Porsche has not been ruled out to return to Formula One as an engine supplier. Does anyone know anything about that? I see that they want to, you know.
There's rumors.
You know what? Now that Formula One has become, you know, and Eccleston is not in the top seat anymore. Now there's a lot of manufacturers, engine suppliers that seem to be wanting to get into Formula One. Aston Martin's another one. They're looking to get into Formula One. Porsche's looking to get into Formula One. So I think that's brilliant.
Porsche has committed to Formula E for 2018 forward. And Formula E is apparently the new big thing. That's where manufacturers want to be seen. That's where their technology can really progress the road cars. So Formula E is a very big thing, but Formula E doesn't have the marketing or the hype or the big name drivers that Formula One has. So you can kind of get into Formula E, but nobody really knows much about it. Nobody's watching races on Sundays or reading the news or so forth. So I think Formula One still has a lot of clout, but Formula E is sort of the next chapter in engine development.
Yeah.
Do you think it will ever be as big as Formula One?
No.
Let's talk 30, 40 years, though.
They need to get the drivers. So they need to get an Alonso or a Hamilton into Formula E, I think, will sort of drive that. And now that Porsche is there, Porsche is going to spend a lot of money marketing their product. So I think it can grow. Mercedes is also coming in. BMW is coming in. Jaguar. Audi's already there. So
It could happen.
It could happen.
But it's not going to be the same, is it? I mean, the sound of a Formula One car is just absolutely phenomenal.
And there is a reason we're called petrol heads and not electric heads.
Yeah. You're looking at an electric head.
Yeah.
You've just coined a new term.
There you go. You heard it here first from me.
Exactly. My new name.
The electric head. Yeah, so anyway, so we'll see what happens there. Well, gents, thanks very much. That's a nice little F1 recap. But obviously, the reason why we've got you gentlemen in studio, Harry, I'm going to start
with the cars. That's right. Let's get them out of the way. That's fine.
So we'll talk quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Very quickly. All right. So
Andrew, okay, that's enough. So on to me.
Andrew, you're obviously on the guild and on the judging panel of the 2018 West Bank Car of the Year, COTY, as it's affectionately known. And I know that they're announcing the finalists tomorrow, but we've got 20 semi-finalists that have been lined up. And I just wanted to kind of chat to you about it. Maybe you can just unpack kind of what goes into choosing the cars, how you guys, you know, go about doing this, you know.
It's a lot to cover. So
long, protracted discussion. Yeah.
That's why I said let's just move straight on to me and let's leave this.
There we go.
Basically, you can only select cars that are been launched in the last 12 months.
Okay.
And they have to be new cars. They can't be like a slight engine variation or a slightly different body style or so forth. They actually have to be quite redeveloped in terms of to qualify.
Okay.
And then our judging panel, which is about 25 people.
Yeah.
We go through the cars and we decide on which engine or which specification best represents that car. So whether it's an Audi Q2 or a Kia Sportage, we all decide. We think the diesel with the automatic gearbox is actually that car's best representation of the range and its best chance of winning.
Yeah, you're probably not giving yourself doing yourself justice here. It's not. I don't think the judges. Just sit down and think about the car and then decide that this engine's better than that. They actually put it through its paces. You guys put it through kind of a set of predefined tests and judging criteria, right?
Yeah, well, the semi-finalists is a little bit different. I mean, we've obviously driven all these cars before, so we know which works and what's their best sort of combination. But once we've chosen the finalists, then we go to the next step, which is a very thorough testing.
Yes.
And then we put it through that extra set of tests and sort of scoring.
Yes.
But the semi-finalists is more a discussion between the judges and the jury.
And there's 20 now? And you whittle it down to 10?
To 10, yeah.
And that announcement's being made tomorrow, am I right?
That'll be made tomorrow, yeah.
Okay,
so,
cool.
And then from the finalists, then we take the next step and we go and
test and just to clarify, these cars are not in a competition against each other, am I right?
Yeah.
They're in a competition against their class segments within the industry.
That's the biggest misunderstanding that comes from the public. They think we're testing a 5 Series against the Kia Picanto that makes the finalists, and that's definitely not the case because you could never do that. So you take those finalists and you have to say, is this 5 Series the best car in class? So is it better than an A6? Is it better than an Mercedes E-Class? Is that the best car in its segment? Is a Kia Picanto the best car in its segment? Is it better than a Hyundai or a Kia of its same family?
Yeah.
And that's the thing you've got to clear up with the public.
We
do not test the 5 Series against the Picanto, against the Porsche, against the this.
Yeah.
We are testing, those are the best 10 cars on sale in 2017.
100%.
That's a deserving accolade in itself.
Yeah.
So we just take that and we say, okay, well, are each of these cars, which one is the best in its segment?
Okay, cool. Let me ask you a question here. How did you get into, what was it about cars that when you were young, you were like, that's what I want to be. I want to be a motoring journalist. Or did it just happen?
I think when you're not quick enough to be a racing driver
okay.
and you don't have the money to back that sort of hobby, then you try to look at other avenues to get into cars. So I've always enjoyed being a journalist, always enjoyed producing content.
Yeah.
Obviously enjoyed cars and was fascinated by the industry. So it just seemed like a logical way to sidestep the the racing thing and exactly. actually get into it. So.
All right, cool. Well, listen, just quickly while we're on that, let's just talk through the 20 cars that are the 20 semi-finalists. So there's the Alfa Romeo Giulia, there's the Audi Q2, there's the Audi Q5, there's the BMW 5 Series, there's the Honda BRV, there's the Honda CRV, there's the Honda Creta. Is that right?
Creta. Yeah.
There's the Hyundai Elantra. There's the Kia Picanto. There's the Kia Sportage. There's the Land Rover Discovery, the new Discovery.
Yeah.
Not a huge fan of its looks.
It's quite polarizing.
Yeah. Mitsubishi Pajero Sport. There's the Nissan Navara. There's the Peugeot 3008. There's the Porsche Panamera. Renault Megane.
Suzuki Baleno.
Suzuki Ignis. A Toyota CHR and then the Volvo S90
and the Mini Countryman.
No Mini.
Yep.
Is it?
I think we.
Yep.
Was on the Discovery. That? You were too busy lambasting looks and.
Yeah. Sorry, my bad. But now tell me, out of that field, have you?
Do I? Are you asking me which ones I think stand a good chance?
Yeah.
Okay.
To say, don't let a cat out the bag, please. We don't want into trouble.
Let's start near the top. So I think the Giulia will definitely or probably make it. Q2 is quite expensive, so I'm not quite sure if that's gonna cut it.
Does price play quite a big factor in the judging criteria?
Of course. I mean, you have to look at, again, not what it's competing against in the semifinals, but what it competes at in the real world, in dealerships, what sort of competition is out there. So a Q2 is actually quite high priced. I mean, yeah. it is quite a fashionable thing, so you kind of get away with it. But other cars that should make it, maybe the Hyundai, Kia Picanto, I think is a big favorite for me.
Mm-hmm.
Then Discovery is very versatile.
Yeah.
I mean, that car, proper off-road, luxurious.
No, it's fantastic. I mean, I got to ride it at the Festival of Motoring and we'll go for a ride in it. And it really is it's a lovely car. I just don't know. I prefer the kind of old school, more boxy, you know.
Then Toyota CHR, that's quite a big car for them. That's quite young and cool, and turbo motor and so forth. So there's a few that I think are favorites, but certainly the Kia Picanto for me is a model that stands out as something that's really ticks all the boxes.
My vote's behind the Giulia.
Okay.
Just because
you got to drive that, didn't you? You absolutely loved it, hey?
You know, if you like that car before you get into it, you won't turn back once you get into it. It's an unbelievable car to drive.
But now, Alphas have a reputation for being unreliable, don't they?
Apparently not this one.
Well, yeah, it's only been out about 3 months. Give it a chance.
Give it a chance. Because of there's a supercar involved in its engine production.
Okay.
I think it's Ferrari.
Yeah.
That's involved in its engine production.
Allegedly, I mean, very closely, but they'll never admit it.
They'll never admit it. Okay. Yeah.
Well, Andrew, thanks very much. We really appreciate you being in studio, and don't go anywhere. Hang around. That announcement's going to be made tomorrow. Anybody who is interested can find out who the finalists are on autotrader.co.za, because we'll have that all covered up. And now on to a really, really...
The important news.
The most important
news. The only reason you're listening to this show.
Exactly. The only reason everyone is tuned in this morning is last week was the Pirelli 2017 Bike of the Year finalist, the announcement.
Yes, we had the event on the Friday, Saturday, the actual two-day judging event, and then Monday we announced the winner.
Okay, well, I was fortunate enough to crack an invitation to that, and thank you very much. It was a fantastic evening. I really had a good time. You guys...
You sound surprised that we can actually do something like this.
No, listen, there was no doubt that I knew you two knew how to throw a good party.
They just rev their motors through the night and
the only time the bikes got started was when they had to
leave.
Some of the guys had to wheel them out.
Yeah.
That was it. No, it was a really, really good evening. So,
thank you.
Harry, again, can you unpack for our listeners what goes into it? Is it a similar criteria to the car of the year? Very same?
So it's frightingly similar, actually. We've been doing, this was the fifth edition of the competition. And yeah, exactly the same as Car of the Year, really. Each bike that is eligible has to be a brand new for 2017 or that year model. Can't be just a warmed over paint job or a bit of a different styling job. It's got to be a significant update or a brand new model. And we're not short of finalists to choose one. I think there were 25, 26 bikes this year which were eligible.
Oh, really?
So brand new for 2017 models. We whittled that down to 15 bikes. across the board. I mean, from a little BMW G310 through to a an Indian Scout 60, through to super bikes, adventure bikes, naked bikes. We are across the board. And again, like Car of the Year, we're not trying to compare a Fireblade, Honda Fireblade superbike against a little G310 commuting bike. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
And to a large extent, we are expecting the judges, who are all experienced motorcycle journalists, we are expecting them to use their intelligence and not say, well, this little BMW is fantastic. It might be significant for BMW, but you have to look at it within its class. Yes. So does it beat the little KTM 390 Duke? Does it beat the Ducati Scrambler 400? And so on and so on.
Yeah.
And that's where the experience of the judges comes in. So we take all these 15 bikes, and this year we changed the format slightly. In previous years, we've headed out towards Sarby and Hazyview around that area, so some fantastic riding roads. But this year we did a sort of a 300-kilometer route around Gauteng, and then on the Saturday, that was on the Friday, on the Saturday we spent at Geritech, the big test facility.
All right.
So using their dynamic handling track, the high-speed oval, and then the off-road course for the adventure bikes.
Yeah.
And actually that worked really well because it's just you can ride each bike on the same piece of road.
Yes.
And you can do a few laps, come in, change bikes, and you're doing a complete back-to-back comparison. Yeah. Again, you've got to use your intelligence. You can't jump off a Fireblade and go, you know, wipe the sweat off your brow and then jump on a little Indian Scout, and sort of, which is a cruiser, and go and, you know, compare directly. But again, you are looking for the bike which has made the greatest advance within its class. How has it moved the class forward?
Yeah.
Has it introduced new technology to the class?
Yeah.
And we don't actually forget there is a certain sort of subjectivity as well. What's the wow factor? Which bike did you get off and you went, flipping heck, that really surprised me? And which one would you pay, spend your own money on as well? That has to be an element of it.
But there'll be that, and I'm assuming that there'll be in both competitions. You know, your natural affinity to liking something will shine through on a particular kind of...
Yeah, you've got to have the professionalism to sort of stand back and look at it completely dispassionately. Yeah. But you can't remove the human passion element completely, because that's a lot of how we buy things.
Yes.
So you have to bring a little bit of that in.
Yeah.
But it can't be the overriding criteria.
Well, I mean, when I saw the bikes that were lined up there, I would have, if I was buying a bike and not knowing, you know, too much about all of them, I would have bought that little BMW.
It is a fantastic thing. And a lot of people got off it and were really, really surprised at how good it was. But in the context of the class, it's not breaking new ground. For BMW personally, it's an amazing development, but not within the class.
All right. Now tell me, who won?
Well, I'll give you a top six rundown, should I?
There you go, from the top.
Please. In sixth place was the Indian Scout 60, which impressed a lot of people. It does things that a cruiser shouldn't do. It rides like a cruiser shouldn't ride.
Yeah.
In fifth place was the Suzuki SV 650. Little naked 650, under 100,000 rand, fantastic little commuter. It looks really unassuming and a bit bland, but once you've ridden it, it's actually got a lot of balls to it.
Okay, fantastic.
Fourth place was the BMW, the G310.
Yep.
A fantastic little bike, a fantastic price. So, I mean, 62,000 rand for a BMW.
What a pleasure.
So you're getting BMW quality, you're getting BMW servicing experience and the dealer experience. So it's a very important bike for BMW. Third place was the Ducati Supersport, which is a fantastic little bike. It's a 900cc V-twin. It looks very much like their superbikes, but it's a little bit... It's for older people, should we say that.
Yeah.
It's a bit more upright seating position. It's more of a more practicality for long-distance touring work.
Something that Matt should be driving.
Indeed, Matt did like it very much, yes, because he could get off without having to crick his neck again. So, and second place was the Honda Fireblade. A fantastic... Well, look, we've been waiting for this bike for a long time.
Yeah.
Honda really have kept us waiting, and when they've come up with it, it's got fantastic class-leading electronics. I mean, the adjustment parameters you can do on the bike is just incredible. We had the SP version, which is the more equipped, so you get quick shift up and down, you can adjust the suspension electronically, you can adust the engine braking. I mean, it's off the scale what you can do with these bikes now. And the winner was the KTM 1290 Super Adventure R, which I think was a worthy winner. Again, it's moved the class on. It's introduced new electronics. The problem with adventure bikes is they are getting so big.
Yes.
I mean, they're enormous things.
Yeah, they are. If
you've got skill, you can ride these. The good thing about the Adventure R is that it's introducing electronics which would make it possible for mere mortals like me and you and all of us in here to actually ride them and not kill ourselves immediately anyway.
Yes.
But they are getting fantastically physically large. And so if you do drop one, you're going to struggle to get up. So it's, you know, and there is a new sort of class coming along where the 310 BMW, they're introducing a GS version of that. So that'll be an off-road adventure version of that.
Okay.
You've already got the Honda 250 Rally and the Kawasaki Versys 300. So there's kind of a reaction coming to the size of these things, which is going to be a much smaller, more manageable bike. But anyway, the KTM won, and yeah, it was a worthy winner.
Now, I want to, you were saying outside in the studio that adventure biking is just absolutely flying in this country. Now,
yeah.
A lot of people getting onto these kind of bikes, because, you know, you see them in traffic. I mean, they're obviously using them as commuters, but then on the weekend, it's, you know, I'm gone. Cheers. See you Monday.
You know what? I think a lot of them, it's a bit like the whole sort of Land Rover thing and Range Rover. They are fantastically competent off-road, but really how many do actually go off-road?
Yeah.
An adventure bike is very, very practical. So, you know, whether you're running through traffic, whether you're doing long-distance touring, if the tar does turn to dirt, then you can tackle that. So they're popular because of their practicality. Whether, I would say, probably about 40% of them only ever actually get seriously off-roaded.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I mean, that's the owner's prerogative.
100%.
As long as people are buying bikes.
Yes, exactly.
Know.
Well, you know, I'm an advocate for two wheels. Just for me, it makes sense to ride a bike when there's traffic and you don't
every morning I jump on the highway to go around to Honeydew to our office and I just pass these queues of traffic. I'm thinking, you fools. You're absolute idiots. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
You do this for a living almost. I mean, honestly, it's mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing. Andrew, do you have a retort for that?
just on the adventure bike, and I think for cars it's pretty much the same. I mean, nobody really uses the functions of a Land Rover Discovery to their fullest.
Correct.
But there are certain advantages to it in terms of you sit higher, the car's a bit bigger, so you feel safer and you can see further ahead. And it just creates an impression, I think, of a lifestyle that you wish you lived.
Yes, 100%.
So, we don't use them. We're not engaging diff locks all the time and climbing hills, but as a car, it sort of has other advantages.
Sure,
to
exactly.
Yeah, as you say, I mean,
and
at the end of the day, as an aesthetic thing, an adventure bike looks fantastic. Yeah. It looks purposeful. It's exactly. Big and it's got chunky wheels. And I mean, the KTM Adventure, it's got 160 brake horsepower, this thing.
I don't know, is that a lot? It sounds like a small car to me.
I'm sure it beats a lot of small cars, to be honest. But no, I mean, it's a massive amount of power for something that can go off. So it is a lifestyle choice and it's an aesthetic choice. But when you see people riding these things off-road who can handle it, it's insane what they can make them do.
Exactly.
Oh, it's 100%. Incredible.
But I think it's good for the industry as well, isn't it? That we've got two kind of, I don't want to call them award shows because it's not really like that. Although they do get awarded, but it's just, I think it's great that we are recognizing the cars that are coming into and the bikes that are coming into this country, and that we have journalists who are allowed to have opinions, and you know we put them out there, and I think it really is fantastic.
Look, one of the big things for Bike of the Year for us was we actually kind of want the result to be controversial.
Yes.
Because we need people to just be talking about it, to argue about it, just get the conversation going, because people aren't buying bikes at the moment. The industry is really suffering.
Yeah.
So get people to get so worked up that they're going to take the wallet, walk into a showroom and say, right, I'll show these sods, I'm going to buy a bike.
There you go.
Brilliant. Just be controversial. Yeah, get people passionate about it again.
Exactly, 100%. Well, gents, thank you so much.
Absolute
really,
pleasure.
Really is cool to have you guys in studio, and I know that you won't be strangers. We'll get you back. What we're going to do now is we're going to cut to a clip. Chad and Lawrence were test driving the new Hyundai Elantra Turbo Sport, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of tech, and take a listen to this.
Hi, welcome guys. Yep, time for another review, and I'm not doing it alone this time. I'm actually being joined by Lawrence.
Howdy do.
Yeah, and the reason why I think we're doing this one together is because both of us have actually driven this car, and it is going to be a bit of a topic amongst journalists in the upcoming weeks. It is a West Bank Car of the Year finalist, and we are...
Deservedly so.
Deservedly so, yes. And we are talking about the Hyundai Elantra 1.6 Turbo Elite Sport. It is a bit of a mouthful, but I tell you what, it's a lot of car as well.
For
a little bit of money. I think it represents fantastic value for money. So I don't think we're going to get to the price just yet. I want to talk about what you're getting in the car. You did it on the launch. I had it on review. I've shot a bit of a video on it, and that's going to be dropping shortly. And it offers a lot of car. I want to tell you how much car there is being offered there before we get down to what this is going to cost. So What were your impressions of the launch? What did they have you doing on the launch?
Okay, well, they actually let us take it around a racetrack first. So we drove from the airport out to Red Star Raceway, gave the cars a solid thrashing around the racetrack, and then drove back. And to be perfectly honest with you, it surprised to no end. There's plenty of power underfoot. It handles like a dream, and it is super comfortable.
It is. I thought it was a fantastically well-rounded package. And, of course, when you see the price, and I don't always take a look at the price when I climb into a car to test it. I want to sort of climb into it, experience it, and then see how accurately I can guesstimate the price, see what value I place on that vehicle.
So, interesting question. After you've driven it, how much did you think it was worth before checking the price tag?
Before checking the price tag, in all honesty, I sat there and I was thinking, you know, this is going to come in $450,
$480 thereabouts.
Yeah, around there, you know, sort of the half a million rand mark, because it is a lot of car. And it's nice to hear that they took you out to a racetrack, because then clearly they believe that the sport side of things isn't just a fancy badge or a badge that means, hey, this has got a body kit and wheels on it, that there's actually a little bit of performance and prowess under there.
No, 150 kilowatts under your right foot, 265 newton meters of torque. And a flappy paddle, 7-speed gearbox. The thing went. It just, I can't even begin to explain to you what kind of a drive it was like, being so surprised by a vehicle and its prowess out on track.
And the gearbox, you were mentioning that it sits there with a flappy paddle gearbox. It is a dual clutch gearbox.
Yes.
It is a 7-speed gearbox.
Yes.
And I was actually pleasantly surprised by it. It's not the best out there. And that's why we sat there and said, oh, okay, well, this isn't quite a high-end 700,000 rand car. It's consumer market, and yes, 150 kilowatts is a fair amount, but it's not too much. I mean, they're claiming 7.7 seconds 0 to 100 from a front-wheel drive car, and which isn't bad, and it's a nice full-size sedan.
It's handled well. You would expect a vehicle of this length to have a little bit of torque steer going into corners.
Yes.
You know, it would push the front wheels if you go in a little too hot. But surprisingly, very, very well composed. And even though we'd been thrashing them around the track, I think by the time we'd finished doing a couple of hot laps, I think it was up to like 11 liters per 100. On the drive back, it plummeted to about 7.2, which is actually lower than what they claim at 7.9.
And I noted that as well, because it was surprisingly efficient. I sat there and I was thinking to myself that this is a car that has the moniker Sport, but isn't as thirsty as what you think it's going to be. So then where have they cut a corner? Because it's unheard of to have
Sport mode.
It's unheard of to have respectable fuel economy and still have the sort of get up and go that it has.
Performance.
Yeah, the performance that it has. And it seems to strike such a brilliant balance between the two. And I mean, I think it's well equipped as well. So it's not as if they cut back on creature comforts. We've got 6 airbags. There's infotainment. There's cruise.
And that lovely red leather interior.
I tell you what.
It's the first thing you notice when you walk up. Whether you got it in red, white, black, or silver, that red leather interior just screams sports car.
And there's a sense of occasion when you climb into it, which is something that I like. I don't want to climb into a car that says it's sporty and then it feels all dull and boring.
And that's the thing, is the seats themselves were very sports-like. They had very deep bolsters, so even when you're going around corners at full speed, you don't feel like you're going to slide out. So I would use the term cosseting.
I think so, without being claustrophobic. It had a nice design to it. The fit and finish was of a fairly high standard, a very acceptable standard, and one that, like I say, I was sitting there saying, yeah, 540, that's what I'm expecting to pay here. I'm looking at sort of baby 3 series, baby C class money for this. So
yeah, that's the segment that it's boxing in.
It is the segment that it's boxing in,
and
but
then,
it's got a slightly smaller motor.
And then you get to the
1.6.
Bottom of the specs page and you realize, wow, how is Hyundai bringing this vehicle in and still making money?
Because they've still covering it with that fantastic 200,000 kilometer drivetrain warranty that spans 7 years. I mean, the normal warranty is 5 years and 150,000 kilometers, which is going to cover odds and ends, you know, lights that stop working, that sort of thing. But on the drivetrain, it's 7 years and 200,000 kilometers.
And on a sports vehicle, it is not very often that a manufacturer offers that kind of...
That they're going to stretch to that.
Exactly.
Okay, so I think we need to start talking about the ones and the zeros. Money. Actually, before we talk about that, what were your takes on the styling?
The Elantra was never an ugly car.
No, no, it wasn't.
Previous gen, and even this one, very understated. It gives you a sense of executive saloon, but yet, I would like to say it's a comfortable mix between Toyota Corolla and a BMW 3 Series.
That's actually a fantastic way of putting it. Yes, it doesn't have that sort of wallpaper effect, sadly, sorry Toyota, but that wallpaper effect that the Corolla has, but it also doesn't have that presence that, let's say, a 4 Series BMW is going to have.
But if you see one of these, you're still going to stop, take a step back. And okay, well, it's an Elantra. It just has that effect. It's a very pretty car.
And it was a small little detailing cues. It was that little kick up in the back of that little sort of included
wing. That's now the sport, the sport side of it. Because the standard Elantra is... It's a little bit boring, let's put it that way.
A little more run-of-the-mill.
So you give it a bit of a sport, and it just, you really do. You become a very attached to these cars very, very quickly.
And I think that's one of the things. It was very endearing. I found the car to be quite endearing. I enjoyed driving it. I had no real major worries or quarrels with it. There wasn't anything that put me off driving it, except maybe the fact that it wasn't mine. Because I could comfortably put one of these in the driveway. I know we always sit there and say, would we spend our money on it? And while I may not put my money on it, I can definitely understand when somebody else does spend their money on it. And I'm going to recommend that they would.
Not going to sit there and go, are you mad?
Yeah. Are you drunk? Have you been day drinking?
And that's where the price tag comes in, because when you realize what this is coming in at, you really are sitting there going, okay, well, that where's the nearest dealership?
Yeah.
Because...
All right, here we go. You guys sitting down? Because we're reaching the end of this little review. We've shared our opinions on it. And we want Andy and you guys to sit there and continue chatting about it, because it is a West Bank Car of the Year finalist. And I think that this car is going to do extremely well. The guys are calling it the Hyundai Surprise. Because it is. It's a very surprising car.
Surprise.
And the reason why it is so surprising is because all of this is going to cost you 399,900 Rand. That's right. 100 Rand shy of 400,000 Rand. For the new Elantra 1.6 Turbo Elite Sport.
And that is a heck of a sight cheaper than almost all of its competitors. So I would say definitely, if you are in the market for a vehicle of this type, go to your nearest Hyundai dealership and go and check this out, because you will not be disappointed.
Don't pass over this one. You definitely have to take a look at it. And I'm in agreement with you there. An endearing car that we really enjoyed. And take a look for our video that's going to be coming to our YouTube channel. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our YouTube channel, do all those little odds and ends on the social media, and we'll keep you up to date with our new videos that drop. Lawrence, thanks, bud. Been nice chatting to you. We've run a nice, lengthy little bit of a review here, but I'll let you guys continue talking about the Hyundai Elantra.
Right, thank you, Chad and Lawrence. Some insight there into the new Hyundai Elantra. Right, and as we do when we...
Hyundai Elantra. Hyundai. It's supposed to be like Monday. Hyundai.
It's the same as... Is it Toyota changed how they pronounce their... Was it Toyota?
Really?
Well, I've always called it Toyota. What do we call it now?
Not Toyota. Total. Total.
Oh, it's Total now, yes. Because they're French.
Because they're French.
And they always have been. Funny that, isn't it?
That's the difference between champagne and champagne.
Yeah, exactly.
This is descending quickly into madness.
Total. Anyway.
It's like we're on the bike show.
Yeah.
Moving swiftly on then. Exactly. Thank you.
So into our tech talk this morning. And just some things that we've picked up over the last couple of weeks. I see BMW joins the push for electric cars. And this includes plans for a Rolls-Royce EV.
Yeah, so they're late to the party. But the nice thing is they've committed to numbers, which you don't often see. I mean, you like, for instance, Volvo say, oh, by 2020 they want to have full electric. And all this. Whereas these guys have said they want 12 electric and 13 hybrid cars by 2025. So it's nice to see BMWs finally coming to the party. They presented some concept cars at the Frankfurt Motor Show.
Yes, they did, and we'll get onto the Mini. Yes, yeah. We'll get onto that just now. Then I see that Jaguar also, there's a new E-Type Zero. I obviously don't think this is a production car. They've obviously taken a classic vehicle and they've now put a lot of batteries in it.
Well, I mean, or you could look at it, they've created a lot of luggage space.
Plenty luggage space, actually. I mean, because it's got quite a long front, that.
Yes. So phallic, I think, was the term we're looking for.
Okay.
E-Type Zero, right?
Yeah, E-Type Zero. We were chatting just now that, you know, some of us like classic cars, some of us don't. But a classic electric vehicle, is this something that might become something? Are guys going to go and buy Mustangs and, you know, Corvettes and Cadillacs and convert them? I mean, is that going to be the next cool thing? Like, what you got there? What's under the hood?
Wow, it depends how difficult it becomes to actually run a classic vehicle with an old-fashioned petrol engine in it in 30, 40 years' time.
Well, I keep coming back to this concept of you still see horses riding on the beach.
Are they going to become electric powered now?
100 years ago, that was the mode of transport.
Yeah,
so
completely. Yeah.
Obviously, guys are. This was obviously because they were taking it to. It was a show that it was presented at.
I don't know if it'll become the norm.
I don't think it's going to become the norm.
For me, the point of restoring a classic car is to restore it to its original glory.
Yes.
Not try and re-engineer it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, well, I can tell you now that the next generation Nissan Leaf electric car is going to be headed for South Africa, and it has a battery range of 380 kilometers.
Yeah. So this is very interesting because it'll be squarely in the Model 3 Tesla segment. Hopefully those two go head to head in the country to keep prices down. But it's good to see that they're doing something in the electric world that extends range. Because
I mean, how much can we trust these range figures? I mean, because everyone used to say like petrol consumption figures were so unreal worldly gained, you know, and like worked out. Can we believe that this will do three? Is it 350 kilometers at 5 kilometers an hour, or
is it just 380 km? Yeah, I suppose.
Well, I mean, so if we're to just kind of rewind back to the petrol engine cars, what affects fuel consumption? So the things that affect fuel consumption is air density, fuel quality.
Yeah.
So if you put crap fuel in the car, it's not going to be efficient. The age of the engine and the efficiency of that motor and the time that it's been used. So if those are the three main factors influencing fuel consumption.
And how
heavy
your
right foot is on the gas is going to affect fuel consumption. How many things affect electric cars' range?
Yeah.
And I don't think there are too many except your foot on the accelerator. And maybe the age of the battery.
But that's what I was going to say to you. Is this going to become like cell phones? I mean, I have to charge this thing every single night. When it was issued, you know, it would last maybe 2 or 3 days.
I think it's because of the way you charge it. So lithium batteries or cell phone batteries are designed, or should I say, they should not be charged to 100% all the time. Uh-oh. If you leave it on charge overnight, you're actually doing your cell phone a disservice. Now, what they've built into electric cars is the automatic regulation. That's the wrong word. The regulation of that power.
Okay.
So it doesn't get to 100% and then stay on charge and stuff up the battery.
Okay, so will it just switch off automatically?
It automatically switches the charge off and doesn't allow the battery to get stuffed up. So I suppose it remains to be seen whether these range figures can exist in cars, in electric cars that are 5 years plus old.
Yeah.
Because we know that petrol cars become more inefficient as they
get
age.
Older, yeah.
So is it going to happen to electric cars? I don't think there's been enough on the road yet to really.
So we'll have to just, we'll answer that question for you in about 15 years. If that's
Thanks,
okay.
I'll be waiting to hear.
Right.
That'd be great.
Still in the same chair.
When we have self-driving motorbikes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, just coming out of the Frankfurt Motor Show, with the overarching theme being electrification, there were some really, really high-end, world-class electric concept cars that were, you know, what are they, revealed or unveiled.
Not my favorite thing, concept cars, but... if some of these things turn into real electric cars, gee whiz, we're in for a brilliant bright future.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a Renault Symbioz. Is that how you'd say it? Symbioz.
Symbioz. It's like champagne.
Is that? How would the Queen say that? Because you are English. I mean,
I do know the Queen very well. Okay. Obviously, yes. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, so anyway, they've designed this vehicle that will become an extension of your house. So they're kind of classifying it as another...
So it's got a bedroom and another kitchen or something.
No, well, like it's a small little living room, you know. So it will have the same kind of high-end finishes that you would get in a modern contemporary home.
Concrete and brick.
No, well, look at it. I mean, it really, really is nice. Inside, the living room-inspired interior, finished with copper, marble, fabric, and porcelain, includes... Well, that's probably where the toilet is, like in the back. It includes four seats that can pivot and face each other. The design also includes a platform that allows the car to be lifted onto your roof terrace. I don't know what that's got to do with the vehicle.
It's a great example of Renault answering questions which nobody had ever asked in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
Really.
But anyway, very, very nice. Concept. And then there's a smart vision EQ for two, and smart have envisioned a different approach for car sharing with this autonomous electric two-seater concept vehicle. And you'll see there's an image over here, but we won't have number plates anymore because your car will just have your name on the front of it.
So well, some already do.
You are personalized number plates. We've seen some of those. George, what do you think of that smart car? I actually think it's quite cute, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's cute. I like the
quite funky.
Yeah.
I like the Honda more.
Well, let's get to that. Oh, do you? This urban EV concept. It looks like a real gangster's electric vehicle.
What are you trying
pimped
to say?
Pimped out, isn't it?
Yeah, pimped out. Really, like it's almost kind of I don't know. If I had to take a modern car and compare it to that, it would be like it's got a bit of a Bentley vibe going on.
Yeah, it does.
But
the thing is, I mean, if you go to Europe and some of the European capitals, you do see a lot of very small practical cars. Are they ever really going to catch on here in South Africa?
Not because of our distances. You know, unless they're really, really really, really efficient and cost effective.
But even within say Johannesburg or Cape Town, people are just so much bigger is better here. So they don't want this little piddly sort of efficient thing.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people will change that though. I don't think cars in the future are going to be as important. I think we've come through an era where what you drive is really, really important, and it's that whole materialistic kind of vibe. I think, over time with ride sharing and, we've got a span of vehicles, I think slowly that will, fade out. Look, you're always going to have people who want to drive a car for a certain reason. I'm not like that, so...
If I could stop driving a car, I would.
Well, ride a bike then.
That's going backward.
I don't agree with George there. I really don't.
Yeah, we
anyway,
can't.
There were two other nice cars that were revealed as well. There's this Audi...
Come on. Riding a horse, then riding a motorbike, then riding a car. Come on, there's a progression there.
No, because you're sitting in traffic. You're sitting still in your car.
If you can ride
a horse
still on a bike, you fall over.
You can ride a horse through traffic if you really want
to.
You don't have to
stop on a bike. You can keep going through the traffic.
Okay.
No.
So there's an Audi Icon, which really, really looks hot. I mean, that is a world-class, futuristic-looking vehicle. And then BMW obviously also came to the party with their iVision Dynamic. And they're going to, after the announcing last week to release 12 pure electric cars by 2025, BMW gave the public a taste of what the future models could be like. And, BMW have always been at the forefront of design, and they really make nice cars. So.
Well, they've all got to catch Tesla.
Yeah, well, but exactly, 100%. Those guys are seriously leading the charge at the moment. And on that note, unfortunately, that is the hour up. Gentlemen, George, thank you so much. Really, really was, it's always a pleasure having you in studio.
Thank you.
Harry? Always lovely chatting to you too.
Always a pleasure to be here.
I must just tell you that Matt was supposed to join you today.
Didn't we see him in the glass?
Yeah, but he decided to use a car to come to the studio this morning. So I think he got stuck in traffic.
He arrived about 10 minutes ago. Well done, lad. Oh, he's shouting something at us now. Luckily, we can't hear you.
Exactly, 100%. So, gentlemen, thank you very, very much. It really, really has been a good one. And we'll catch you in a couple of weeks. CliffCentral.com